Begin Podfix Network transmission in 3, 2, 1.
Suckers in the back seat, mama's home hungry.
Mark my words, Michael Knight will die.
I am the voice of Knight Industry 2000's microprocessor.
You wish to eat, you wish to drink, you wish to reproduce.
Yeah.
Which one first?
Excuse me, I was hoping I could get a Hill student loan.
I think you're in the wrong department.
Discipline has never been a problem.
Greg, it's really weird because I don't think I actually remember how to podcast.
I forgot what you looked like, and I forgot how to set everything up. I sat down here for 20 minutes in the dark because I forgot how to turn the lights on, and then I remembered I got to turn the lights on to remember how to set my computer up, and I just sat down here even longer. So,
yeah.
It's been weird. I had to relearn everything.
I went down here and realized that it had been almost a month since I had set anything up. I had to take all my computer accessories and everything off and like unhook everything because I had to bring my computer to my father-in-law's memorial service. And then when I came down here tonight to set everything up, I'm like, oh no, like I don't remember how to do it.
You had to sweep all the mouse shit off the mixer, and like I had to clean off all the spider webs and suck up all the detritus.
Actually, it was not mouse. It wasn't mouse shit. It was a bunch of owl pellets, actually, in my keyboard.
Oh, you had owl pellets in your keyboard?
Yeah, I have owls living in my basement.
Oh, wow. Owls that are feasting on all the mice. That's why there was no mouse poop.
Yeah.
Right. Did you cut the owl pellets up and see what it was eating?
No, but I counted them to see. I'm saving it for when we're together again because I want to cut them with you.
Ooh.
There's about 4 dozen of them. That had accumulated.
How many owls live in your basement?
3.
4 dozen. Wow. Okay, they're hungry.
That's feasible, right? That also means that I have a lot of rodents in my basement.
Well, they're all in the owl pellets now. They're all ground up and spat back up. That's like the equivalent. You know, it's I'm glad that you know cats don't do that. Even though they horf up hairballs, they're not horfing up like mice. Like turds. I don't know. You know, like little mouse blah, mouse
yes.
mummies wrapped in hair.
Hey. Hey, if anybody's in the mood for a good laugh, go to YouTube and Google cats vomiting to techno music.
Man, I haven't watched that in forever. It makes my wife puke. It's awful. She's like yeah. It's pretty good, though. There's nothing like a cat barfing to good house music.
Maybe I'll post the link in the show notes so everybody can enjoy it. Oh, hey, Gregory.
David.
Welcome back to Ciampa and Klein, the Knight Rider Years, a podcast by two friends who share a love of classic 80s television. I'm your host, Dave Ciampa.
I'm your other host, Greg Klein.
So, guys, listen. If you're new to the show, the basic idea is that Greg and I, generally on a weekly basis, choose a classic show from the 80s and we dissect it episode by episode. While we do poke fun at the shows a lot, it is out of complete love and admiration for an era that can never be replicated. Occasionally, we will create our own side story within an episode to see where it takes us. Also, Greg is convinced that all 80s TV and movies are connected within the same universe, so that comes into play many, many times throughout. Greg, I was looking back at our last release and the last new episode of the Knight Rider Years was me and my daughters, and so the last one for you and I was almost, I want to say it was almost 5 weeks ago, maybe four.
Was it that long ago? Jeez.
Yeah, it was a while.
That's right, because I missed the next one for whatever reason.
You missed the logging episode.
You know, was it because it was my anniversary? Yeah, it was.
Yes, it was.
Why. October 15th.
So the last episode that you and I recorded and released was October 11th. So
it's been almost exactly
a month since we last recorded.
It has been. Today's the 11th.
Today's
so it's
October,
been exactly a month.
November 12th. So yeah. So it's been a long time. It's
November today is
12th.
The 12th. Yeah, I'm off a day.
And actually, I still have the original note from this week's episode that mm-hmm. the original release date for this was supposed to be October 25th.
So, well, that didn't happen.
So there you have it. So we've now moved it to November 15th, which is the release date of this episode.
Well, at least it ends in a 5.
It's true. It's true. So, Greg, how...
David.
How have you been for the last couple of weeks?
I've been swell, I guess. I mean, yeah. Nothing's really changed. Kind of chugging along, doing my thing. Right. I mean, it sounds you know, boring to say, but status quo. Things have been good, hey. You know, all things considered. You know, watching you from afar and being with you, but mentally, but you know, it's been okay here, I suppose.
I notice you got new glasses.
I did get. Oh, thanks for reminding me. That. Yes, so I guess that's new. I got new glasses.
The last time we recorded, your eyes were literally ready to fall out of your.
Oh yeah, because my contacts are eating miserable. My eyes alive. Yes, that's right. I remember that. It felt like there was sand in both of my eyes. Those contacts were just falling apart, and I had talked to my doctor, and I was like trying to get an appointment. And so the next week, when it was my wife and I's anniversary, it was the last like day or two I used those contacts, and I had to throw them out because they were just shredded, and I had to go to my glasses, which was the old prescription. Now, I haven't worn glasses in about 5 or 6 years, like regularly. So this prescription was way out of whack. And that was even before that. So the last time I got my eyes checked was probably 5 or 6 years ago. And the prescription I had was from the previous. So maybe, I don't know, maybe it was a 10-year-old prescription. I don't know. So I was going around with these glasses that were like woefully out of whack. And it took forever to get the doctor's appointment. And then it was all this bullshit that they didn't have my contact prescription on file. And I didn't bring the box because I'm like, they have it on file. And he's like, I really need the box because it's got everything on it. I'm like, well, you're the doctor. Can't you figure it out again? And I don't know. It was just a load of shit, and it took forever. And I finally got new glasses, and I'm still waiting for my contacts prescription that they said they'd mail me. So I don't know. But hey, so that's great.
Well, I guess it's good for your eyes, though, to let them heal up a little bit since you were for weeks, you were just all I could see was you like – blinking uncontrollably during recording.
Yeah, it's so stupid. It's totally my fault for letting them run out and stuff. But yeah, no, it's good to have glasses. I haven't actively worn glasses on a regular basis for probably 20 years.
I don't remember the last time I've seen you consistently wear glasses, except for like in college, like on a Saturday before you put your contacts in. Like that.
Yeah, you know, and it's been a learning curve. Like it's like my eyes took a while to like recalibrate because everything was kind of in a fishbowl for a while, and like, you know, these glasses are a little wider than what I was normally wearing, so like I'm seeing a lot more image.
Okay.
So the image at the end gets a little distorted. I'm still getting used to it. It's been like 2 weeks, but you know, it's fine. I can see. So there you go.
That's key.
That's important.
That's key. Absolutely. Sorry.
It is. It is.
That was really bad.
Well, there you are. There you are.
Sorry. Well, good. I'm glad that things have been status quo for one of us.
Yeah.
All I can do is laugh right now, because if I don't laugh, I'm going to burst into tears. I don't want to take up the rest of the next couple minutes with it, but I'll just give everyone a quick, for those of you who saw it on Facebook and Instagram, I posted a couple weeks ago, my wife's dad, my father-in-law passed away, 3.5 weeks ago. It was right around the end of October. It was unexpected that it happened when it did, but we kind of knew that it was, things were not, I mean, he hadn't been well for a while, but it was very surprising that it had happened when it did. So I wanted to just kind of extend a quick thank you. I got a heard from a lot of people in the podcast family. A lot of people reached out and sent their condolences, and we really do appreciate it. It's we got clobbered the last couple of weeks. You know, a few other really not great things have happened. We lost another member of our family 10 days after we lost my wife's dad. So that hit pretty hard. And yeah, it's just kind of been a 1-2 punch for the last few weeks. But I feel like we're on the other side of it. We're feeling good. Things are looking up. We're doing okay. But again, just a quick one more thank you to everybody who reached out, because I did hear from quite a few people over the last couple weeks. So it was very, very kind of you all to be thinking of us in this very strange last couple of weeks.
Yes.
And I was like, you know, and I knew, like, I knew that when, you know, when he had passed, I knew that like there was no way that recording was going to happen for at least a week or two. But when we got to like week 3 and 4, and I'm like, you know, we got to get back to some sense of normal at some point. I just texted you this week, and I'm like, please don't please don't tell me you can't record this week. I have to do this. I have well, to
last
record.
It's so funny. The last time I was just like, I didn't have it at that point. I was just like, for whatever reason, I just was not able to muster it up last week.
Yeah.
But, yeah, good to go. Good to go now. And it does feel good now that we're getting back into it. It has been a strange few weeks.
It feels really, really good to do it. Absolutely. I think when I texted you the night he had passed, I was like, so we're going to have to go on a hiatus. Kristen's dad died.
Yeah. I was like, what? I remember I was making dinner and I was just like, wait, what? And it was just very strange because I knew him pretty well. Yeah. I mean, well enough, you know? So I just kind of kept making dinner and it started sinking in. I'm like, wow, this just sucks.
Yes, that's exactly. And I was like, so we can't record this week. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. Oh man, shit. Well, shit. There you go. But then I watched the service, and you know, it was great. You know, yeah. I watched you were live streaming it on Facebook, and it came across quite well, actually. So
good.
It was good to see that and see everybody.
Well, it's
virtually.
It sucked because like we had planned on having the service outside because of COVID. We were able to have more people socially distanced, and then of course, as the day of the service got closer and closer, we just watched the percentage of rain go up and up and up and up. And by the time we got to Sunday, it was like almost 100% chance of rain at the exact time of the service. So we had to make an 11th hour decision to then take the 140 people that had RSVP'd and whittle that down to like less than 100 because because going inside, we had to go less than 100 people socially distanced in the church. And so it was tough, but you know, we had told our close friends who were there, like, just be ready. If we need you guys to watch the live stream, we're going to go to you guys first. And thankfully, all of our friends were like, oh my gosh, absolutely. Like, that's totally fine. Except Greg sent me a series of really awful texts after I told him he couldn't come.
I really wish you hadn't brought that up.
That's okay.
Now that everybody knows that I'm an asshole.
You're not. Oh God, here we go. You're not an asshole, Greg.
Oh, thanks, Dave. Oh, geez.
All right.
Stop telling lies about me.
Well, okay. So I had a bunch of hotline messages that had come in over the last few weeks, but honest to God, because I haven't listened to the last episode I recorded, I don't remember where we left off on hotline messages, and I just didn't have it in me to look. So we're going to put those on hold until next week, and I will find out where we left off, and we will start playing all of them. But for tonight, I think we should just jump into the episode, Greg. Are you ready for this episode tonight?
Oh my God. Watching it yesterday was a blast. I am so ready. And I got a new seltzer here too, so I'm ready to go.
All right, here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Knight Rider Season 4, Episode 14, Deadly Nightshade. Greg, I got a question for you.
I only have answers for you.
All right, here we go. What do magicians, call girls, tigers in heat, and exploding hearses all have in common?
They're all diabetic. I don't know. diabetic exploding hearse.
They all somewhat loosely fit into tonight's episode of Knight Rider.
That's all you have? It's like, oh, they're all from the same episode of Knight Rider.
That's all I had. I couldn't think of a punchline for that. So I'm like, they all factor into Knight Rider.
Well, that's a letdown. I'm gonna open my seltzer. I got a San Pellegrino Italian sparkling drink, the sparkling blood orange beverage. So first, I got to take the foil off.
Please do. Oh, that's my favorite part of a San Pellegrino.
And then I got to open the can.
Go get it, girl. Oh, that was a real.
All right, I'm ready. I'm ready for the episode now.
All right, here we go, Greg. I'm just gonna jump right into the notes. So
that's good.
We open on a magic show, as Knight Rider does, right? You know,
yes, it's so funny because you said I was watching it before you and you're like, boy, I hope there's magic in it. And I'm like, oh yeah, right off the bat, like the first thing, there's magic and a hell of a lot of doves.
That was my
coming out of everything.
That was my second note is, wow, so many doves in this episode.
Now, do you think it was the same dove or he just had doves all up inside of himself?
I would like to believe that he probably had like a dozen doves at his disposal that he could just pull from anywhere he wanted. And I mean anywhere, Greg.
Oh, they had to have come from anywhere. Now, to be fair, the magic in this episode was fun.
Yes.
It was fun
to
watch.
So the gentleman who plays the main antagonist, Austin Templeton, was played by a real-life magician, Lance Burton, actually, who I don't know a lot about.
So the name is equally cool.
Right. Lance Burton plays Austin Templeton.
I prefer a hybrid, though. I prefer Lance Templeton.
And Austin Austin Burton.
Or Burton Templeton. Templeton Burton. Something regal.
Okay.
I'm Templeton Burton.
Oh, God. So I love this opening scene because Bonnie is like complaining to RC about how she thinks magic shows are for kids, but then is immediately complete, like 100% hot for Templeton. Like she gets like a wicked lady boner like the second she sees him walk on stage.
So it's funny. It's because like, you know, Eddie Van Halen died recently. So I was reading a lot of stuff about him. And one of their original songs was going to be Hot for Templeton.
Oh.
But they changed it to Hot for Teacher and changed everything and made it about a teacher instead of a wicked hot magician pulling doves out of his ass.
Was that originally the, was that the,
I'm hot for Templeton.
Was that the original inspiration? Was this episode?
Yeah. Let's see. When was Hot for Teacher? The 84, 85.
I'm looking it up right now.
So yeah, I think
it was 84 and this episode was this.
So I think Hot for Teacher was originally going to be Hot for Templeton. And they're like, David, like, no, change the song. It's not about a musician. Make it like a teacher or something, like a hot substitute teacher. He's like, man, but magic's so cool. Look at my jumpsuit.
Right.
And that's my story about.
Look at me. Come on.
Look at my scooped neck. Anyway.
Okay. So Devin puts in a call because he's not there. So he somehow gets in touch with RC3, is it Michael that shows up? Yes, Michael shows up and goes into the magic show and tells one of the guys there, Mr. Henderson, who is a trustee for the Curtis Foundation. That comes into play in a couple minutes here. Devin has called Mr. Henderson to come back due to a legal snag, and he leaves the magic show to go pack up his stuff in the hotel room.
So this is the thing. This magic show, I guess, is happening in like a hotel ballroom. They're in a hotel, and this happens to be happening there. And Michael was tooling around and told Mr. Henderson to go get his stuff. We're leaving in 10 minutes. So Mr. Henderson goes up to his room.
Right.
And the great Templeton is on stage doing his performance. And he decides to change the order of things and does the escaping bit.
What is it? What do they call it? The Table of Death? Is that the name of this? The name of the?
I don't. Sure. It's a giant. It's a giant table that he lies down on, gets wrapped up in a, you know, like a. straight jacket, and it's all these spikes, and then he lies down on the table, they pull a curtain in front of him, and then his assistant lights a candle underneath a rope that's holding all the spikes up. So when the candle burns through the rope in exactly 3 minutes, because that's a very precise timer right there, candle burning a rope, in exactly 3 minutes, the spikes are going to plunge down and nail him to the table.
So I'm not going to lie to you, Greg. This whole sequence, after he gets wrapped up in front of under the curtain, way longer than 3 minutes.
Yeah, it was. It was much longer than 3 minutes. Because he runs off and he runs up to the hotel room and kills Henderson by throwing a magically produced dagger perfectly in the center of his chest.
That was great.
Like right through the sternum. Right, he must have thrown that thing so hard. Right.
Well, okay, so. We're going to jump forward like 20 minutes into the episode, but I feel like you brought up a point for me to say it. He mentions Templeton later in the episode that not only is he a magician, but he's a master assassin.
Yeah, he's a master magician and a master assassin.
So
perfect. Great.
And we find out halfway through the episode that Templeton legitimately believes that he is a real sorcerer, Greg.
Yes. You know, it's funny because Christy asked because he had like purple gloves. He liked the color purple.
Yes.
And she's like, why does he like purple so much? I'm like, because Merlin wore purple in MacGyver. And MacGyver met Merlin the Magician, and he looked like... So if Templeton wants to be a sorcerer, he's got to dress up like Merlin.
That's exactly...
So that's why he likes all the purple.
That's exactly right.
I'm surprised that he didn't have a bunch of gold stars sewn on the inside of his jacket.
Oh, gosh. I also got to tell you, the performance from the guy who plays Templeton, Lance, he's not a good actor. Like, I didn't think he was... I did not think his performance was that good. It was not that convincing.
Well, it's weird. You know, it's funny you say that. It's like... He wasn't an actor. No. But I thought what he did was... Maybe it's just the way he did it. He didn't intentionally do it. But he just came across as, like, a total sociopath.
Oh, yeah.
Which... kind of, for me, worked. Like, creepy, like, he did magic, like, to the point that it was obnoxious. Like, he did it constantly.
Yes.
Like, he was pulling stuff out of his sleeves, like, pulling tricks, like, doing all sorts of shit, like, in his daily actions, that it was annoying. But he was such a creep that it was like, God, this guy is just, ugh.
He's just like,
you can't put it away, can you?
It's like he's kind of like got a Joe Bluth vibe going on. Like, all he does is he just wants to do, like, really bad magic. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I say yes, but I don't. Yeah, totally, Dave. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Let's move on, Greg, you stupid idiot.
Okay.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be. That was really rude. I'm sorry. Now I feel guilty.
All right, asshole. It's fine.
Okay. So, Templeton throws the knife right through Henderson's chest. As Michael is kind of prowling around to kind of figure out what's going on, he's waiting for Henderson. He hears the housekeeper screaming from the room, and he goes in and finds Henderson dead. The housekeeper tells Michael she saw a man leave the room, and Michael chases him, but the man disappears completely off of Kit's scanner before anyone can find him.
What's funny is that the knife was gone out of Henderson's chest.
I did notice that.
Did you notice that?
Yes.
So the scene that they cut was showing Templeton standing on Henderson's chest with both feet on his chest, pulling the knife out of his chest. Because it was in there so tight.
So that explains...
They skipped over that scene.
That explains why Henderson was completely flat against the ground.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because he died on the bed, but he found him flat on the ground. It's because, you know, Templeton dragged him out on the ground, and they did like a King Arthur sword in the stone shit trying to pull the knife out of his chest.
Oh, my God. Yep, that's exactly what it was. So, Kit can't find Templeton, or whoever it is, because they don't know it's Templeton at this point. Kit doesn't know where he is. Kit's like, Michael, he's disappeared off my scanners. I have no idea where he went. I don't know what we're going to do. So we come to find out a little bit of a backstory here about who this Henderson was. I already said it before that Henderson was a trustee for the Curtis Foundation, and apparently Henderson was the second of four Curtis Foundation trustees to have died in recent months. I'll bet you can't guess who the other two trustees are, Greg.
Let me see. I think that it's Pee Wee Herman.
Yep.
And Elwood Blues.
You're close. It's Pee Wee Herman and Ernest P. Worrell, actually.
Oh, pretty close. I was pretty close.
So it's Devin is one of the foundation trustees. And this guy who we've never seen before, but he's been referenced, Dr. Browning, who is a foundation technician who had some role in crafting and creating the parts that make Kit go. Shocking.
He did a lot of the programming, I think. He did some programming in Kit.
Yes. Yes, he did. And so my first thought was, oh, okay, here's another foundation tech who's working with Devin. I can't imagine that this is going to end well.
Right. Okay.
Come on, you know? So Michael tells Devin, he's convinced, he's like, I am convinced that Templeton killed Henderson because he was the only other person, because according to RC3, the wait staff at the hotel reported that no one left the room at the time of Henderson's murder, which I had to chuckle at that.
Oh, and the reason why Michael realizes this is because Henderson's schedule changed. He wasn't supposed to leave.
Right.
So if it was a premeditated murder, somebody had to have known that he went up to his room at that point because he wasn't supposed to be there. Right. And the only person that disappeared or was not visible was Templeton.
I'm sorry. I don't know if you can see me. I stuck an eraser up my nose.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I totally saw it. And I was trying to be professional about this.
I can't do it.
But,
I've lost professionalism, man. That went out the window the day we started the podcast. So, yes, you're right. So everything was off schedule, which is what tipped Michael off to think that Templeton had something to do with this murder. We cut to Templeton, who now gets a phone call from some... Is that a screw? What's in your nose there? What is that?
Yes, it's a 5/8 bolt in my nose. I just dropped it.
I heard it hit the microphone. So Templeton.
So we haven't seen each other for a while. Can you tell? Anyway, sorry.
So Templeton gets a phone call in the next scene, and he's talking to someone on the other end saying, yep, it's going to double my fee if you want me to do this. And all we see him do is write Devin Miles' name on a piece of paper, presumably that...
He writes it conspicuously big so that the camera can see it from across the room.
Yes. It's
like... All right. What's his name? All right. Devin Miles. It was great. And why would he do that? Why would he even write it down? He knows who he is.
This is exactly.
He knows who he is. So just like, okay, he's the next target. That's it. Don't write it down, you idiot.
Right. So he could have just said it. And the script could have just dictated it. He could have just said, Devin Miles. All right. I'm going to. Yeah, he's my next guy. But I'll just have you know that that doubles my fee if that's who you want me to kill next. I just think it's funny that this.
Or.
What?
He should have written down Devin's. Motorcycle name, Dusty Miles.
Oh, yes.
Because that's how he's known, like, in certain circles.
Yes.
Dusty Miles.
That's exactly right. So, Kit, as Michael and Kit are going through the alley that they lost Templeton in earlier in the episode, Kit finds a concealed fire door in the alley, and Michael finds the trigger, and he opens the door, and it just, like, pops right open, and he goes on in.
Now, this is the silly thing. Okay. Kit's scanners didn't find him the first time. We learn why his scanners don't work
right later.
But when he scans, he finds, oh, look, there's a concealed fire door. Oh, it must have been left over from when they redid the facade. So of the hotel or whatever. So there's a fire door that's hidden because they painted bricks on it to make it look like the rest of the building, which I guess is a thing. But, you know, that seems kind of like a strange thing to do. It seems very convenient.
Yes.
But whatever. Whatever. I don't care.
It doesn't matter, Greg. All right? It doesn't matter.
Okay. Okay. But David, I want to think logically.
I appreciate that. So when Michael goes into the fire door and he walks through, he picks up a cape. Or, no, it's not really even a cape. It's like a tiny little hanky. With a T embroidered on it, and he starts hearing chuckling from up above, and he climbs up through one of the trapdoors, and he sees Bonnie and Templeton, like, kind of flirting with each other, and, like, he's doing magic, and he's, like, making doves appear out of nowhere, and she's all friggin' hot and sweaty for him. It's gross.
Oh, because did we talk about how Templeton and Bonnie, like, played tennis together by accident?
No, we didn't say it, but that's how she kind of became infatuated with him, because they were playing tennis together, and it turns into them now having this lunch date, but not before Templeton does all sorts of sexy magic in front of her.
So when they were playing tennis, do you think she noticed how many balls he had?
Probably. Do you think it was just he just had them full all over all in his pants and shit?
Just lots of balls everywhere. Like, he was just producing balls. Like, normally you walk out, like, with a basket of balls, you know?
Yeah.
But he just walked out on the court and just started producing balls.
Holy jeez.
From everywhere.
That's a lot of balls.
Furry balls. Some were older balls.
Shaved balls. Shorn balls.
Some were shaved.
Shrivelly balls.
Some were worn out. Some didn't have as much bounce.
Pool balls.
He pulled out an 8-ball. He dropped an 8-ball right on the ground.
Could you see them trying to play tennis with pool balls?
I think, oh, man, you could definitely hit it. It would probably almost break your racket.
Oh, yeah.
But it would be terrifying to try to hit that back. Oh, my God.
Could you feel the,
oh, my God.
The vibration of the friggin' tennis racket after you smashed it? Like, oh, God, the nerves. That was a weird tangent.
Wham! Well, there was a time when I was a kid, I used to go in the backyard and I would hit rocks with a tennis racket.
Oh, I used to do that all the time.
Those would go far.
Oh, yeah.
Holy hell, those would go
Absolutely.
Far.
Absolutely.
It totally shredded the tennis racket and ruined it, but.
Oh, yeah. So when Michael, I love this part, when Michael comes up to Templeton and was like, hey, does this look familiar? And he holds up the little cape with the T on it and he goes, I found this in the fire escape down below. And Templeton's like, oh, really? You mean this cape and this cape and the one in your chest pocket and this one and this one? And he's like pulling out like 8 different capes from all different points. Like, I love that.
See, that's the other thing. That's the point. That's where he started frustrating me. It's like, oh, man, you loaded yourself up with this just in case. Like, how much shit do you have on you for all these contingencies?
No, Greg, listen, he's a sorcerer, so he made those materialize out of thin air. He didn't just have them. This is what sorcerers
do. Okay, okay. Okay, fair enough, Dave. Fair enough. Fine. I'll roll with it.
Okay, now, my favorite scene is the next scene where we see Devin and Michael in Kit, and it looks like, it's like the scene in Tommy Boy with the fat guy in a little coat. Devin looked so, large, sitting in the passenger seat of Kit in this next scene. He looked so uncomfortable being in there. Was it just me, or did you notice that?
Well, it's kind of awkward. It's funny you say this, because this is the times that they shot Devin and Michael in Kit were very difficult, because throughout all the episodes, they were actually shooting Devin in forced perspective. Because Edward Mulhare is actually 7'8" and weighs 350 pounds. So to make him look like smaller to Michael, they had to shoot him in different locations. So shooting him in Kit was always a challenge because he was so big.
So they have to make a double wide seat and just try to force perspective to make Michael look bigger.
Yeah. So the scene with Frodo and Gandalf in the cart in the first Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what they had to do. So Edward Mulhare was actually 6 feet behind David Hasselhoff in a mock-up of Kit to make them look to be the same size.
And Edward Mulhare still looked large. he looked so awkward in that front seat talking to Michael.
Well, have you ever noticed in the wide shots he has Herman Munster feet?
He's got just 8-inch platform shoes on. That's why they never do extreme wide shots of him walking away.
Well, they're shoes to look like they're actually like thick soles, but it's actually to cover up his giant calloused heels, because when he was a POW, he had to run 200 miles on gravel to escape, and he got these giant, thick calluses that still haven't worn off yet.
Devin's gremlin boots.
Oh, boy.
Speaking of POW, I had this moment comes up right here. So we come to find out that Templeton, when Michael ran this report about when the first trustee was killed, it come to find out that Templeton was playing a magic show the same week in the same area that this first trustee was killed. And Devin says, "Oh, July 18th. It's a day I'll never forget as long as I live." And I'm like, oh, I really hope he puts his two times in the POW camp up there too, than this one guy who got murdered, because Devin has seen countless people get murdered. And I imagine he murdered people himself trying to escape twice from a German prison mm-hmm. camp, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. He had to do all kinds of nefarious stuff.
Well, that's why he ended up with his gremlin boots, because he, you know.
Oh, yeah.
His clickety clacks, Greg.
Oh, good God.
Okay. Here comes the weirdest part of the whole episode. So Michael and Devin almost get killed by who we find out later is Templeton driving a hearse in the hotel parking lot. And Michael ends up.
Where? I don't know where he got that hearse.
I don't either. And then
this giant, enormous jet black hearse with jet black tinted windows.
Not only was there one giant black hearse with black tinted windows, but somehow in the course of this chase sequence, Templeton's hearse switches places with an actual hearse in a funeral procession and drives the other direction. And I love the scene, because all you hear is the voiceovers of these bereaved people crying about why this hearse is driving so fast.
I know, it was actually kind of funny. It was completely unnecessary.
Right.
But I was like, man, I want a giant hearse like that. I was like, I want that car. But but it's very strange, though, because that's how he was going to kill Devin, was he was going to run him over with a giant hearse in the front of a hotel.
Yep, that was
it. That's his master assassin plan.
I just like...
Seems a little brutish.
But it's like, these are their plans. They make no fucking sense whatsoever. Yes, he was going to... A magician was going to run Devin over with a hearse and create the greatest escape that he could ever imagine as a sorcerer.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, it's unbelievable. You know, I would think something he should have done something more subtle, like manifested a dove inside of Devin.
Devin's like, oh, Michael, oh, I feel feathers flapping in my stomach. Oh, oh my God.
And then pecks his way out of his chest.
And then when Devin.
A white dove covered in blood.
I was just going to say Devin shits the dove out. And it's just now it's just a brown dove flying away.
it's a pigeon. No. So Devin starts squirming in Kit, and this dove appears, comes out of him. And then Kit's tape deck starts playing White Bird, and Michael starts singing along to it.
Michael, this isn't funny. Michael, this isn't funny.
White bird in a Devon cage.
Oh my God. Oh. So the best part of the whole thing is whenever this the hearse breaks away from the funeral procession, tries to chase after Michael and Kit, swerves out of the way, rolls over, and then explodes. But Kit picks up no life signs inside the hearse. So, you know, when they find Templeton a little bit later, Templeton is like, that was like his greatest escape ever, and nobody was there to see it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was pretty upset about that.
That's all I had.
But Michael, after the accident, Michael went straight back to the theater.
Oh, yeah.
I say theater, but it's just in the hotel somewhere, and confronts Templeton about it, and Templeton denies everything. He's like, what are you talking about? And then as the scene cuts away, you see Templeton pull out his hand, and it's bleeding like it got cut.
Right.
So super magician guy got hurt in his little hearse fiasco. And the other thing is, so I'm just going to throw this right out. Okay, so Henderson dies in the immediately in the beginning. Nobody calls the police. Nobody seems to do anything about it. This hearse flips over in the middle of the day, in the middle of the street. Nobody does anything about it. Like, they're not down at the police station. Nothing has to be done. It's just all this shit is just extraneous. It just happens. It's like walking down the street. You see someone mowing a lawn. Oh, I'm walking down the street. Oh, look, that hearse just flipped over and exploded in that guy's house. You know, like, total normal stuff. Total normal.
It's all normal. You know what else is normal, Greg? So one of the acts that Templeton does at the beginning of the episode is, you know, he makes this tiger appear inside of his car. Well, he appears in the trunk of that car. Now, this after the hearse explodes and Michael goes back to the magic show, we find out that not only are they using one tiger, but when that tiger is in heat, they use a second tiger, not in heat, so that tiger doesn't attack people. Like, come on, man.
Perfect. And, you know, it's funny because Michael keeps going backstage. He just walks right up. It's like, hey, what's up? What's going on? Starts asking all these questions about magician stuff. And, you know, magicians aren't going to tell you how their tricks work. But he keeps going back there and starts befriending, like, the assistant.
Right.
Which she doesn't seem to care. Like, nobody seems to care that he's there asking all this crazy shit.
No, they don't. And we even meet, an older gentleman named, is his name Ariel? Is that what they call him? He's like, he's Templeton's mentor and the magician extraordinaire.
And the assistant's father. Yeah, the assistant's father.
What's his name? Ariel. Yeah. Ariel. Whatever.
Ariel, yeah.
Yeah.
Ariel. He's a moniker. Ariel.
And I love this line because when Michael starts like trying to get Ariel to out Templeton and tell him like this, Templeton's the one who did this. Ariel's only thing is he just says, Austin Templeton must be left to destroy himself. I'm like, those are what? Wow.
It's like, wait, what kind of murky, weird shit is that to say? What are you talking about?
I know.
It's like he thinks he's a magician. You have to let him destroy himself.
Okay.
It's like he has this weird kind of magician wisdom. He's the real one.
He is. He's the real mastermind.
He's the real mystic.
But no, Greg, here's where we find out who the real mastermind is behind this entire plot to kill off all these trustees. It's the former foundation technician, Dr. Browning.
Okay. Surprise, surprise. And right off the bat, I'm like, that's why Kit's systems don't work, because he knows how to deactivate them.
When they find out who it is, Bonnie's like, well, Kit, somebody has screwed with Kit's scanners and shut them down. And Devin's like, well, there's only two people who know how to do that, you and Dr. Browning. Well, Bonnie's like, I didn't do it, so obviously we know who did it.
I just think it's hilarious how there's like, there are no fail safes. Like, there's no record of who does what to Kit. Like, there's no database. It's like there's, you could just walk into Kit and tell him, like, here's a new program. Oh, okay. And upload some Atari game.
And not only that, but like Kit can literally record anything in his systems, and he can't, there's no like you said, there's no audio or video record of anyone getting inside of Kit to screw with his sensors. Like, there's no, like, Kit couldn't say to Michael, somebody's in my system trying to shut down my, like, you couldn't have just said that. Like, that's the easy way to do it.
I don't know. I think for all of Kit's magical stuff, he's very, very vulnerable.
He really, really is.
So now we learn that the one guy, well, now there's only two men left in this, whatever foundation,
the Curtis Foundation. Yeah.
the Curtis Foundation, Devin, and this other guy.
Right.
Because apparently this other guy had the other two killed. So Devin is going to be the only one left to give out all this money.
Basically, it comes down to the fact that if Devin is killed, then Dr. Browning stands to make double what he was originally going to make. And then if he doesn't get killed, if Templeton kills the wrong trustee, he ends up, Templeton loses $5 million. So there's a lot of money at stake if Devin is the one to get murdered here, basically.
So, like you said earlier, like, and to me, maybe by myself, I don't remember, you had mentioned that so many of these episodes are self-generated. Like,
yes.
There's no external problems. It's just shit inside the foundation or friends of the foundation.
Absolutely.
Like, they just make their own drama.
Because Browning stands to gain, like, I think more than $10 million if Devin is killed.
Yeah.
So it's all internal shit. I mean, we crafted a beautiful story about how Devin is probably going to be end up being the mastermind behind all of these coworkers and colleagues being killed, so Devin can just, for his own sick pleasure, just watch everyone burn.
He's created the foundation. It's his own thing now. Like,
oh,
as
yeah.
it is, like, Wilton's gone. Like, Wilton's wife is out of the picture.
Yep.
Like, everyone's gone. All that's left is Bonnie, Michael, and RC, and, like, whoever drives the semi, but we think the semi drives itself,
yeah,
or something.
Exactly.
You know, so, like, the foundation is Devin Miles.
Devin is the foundation. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
Michael, in an effort to out Templeton, because basically the only way they're going to out Templeton as the killer is to, Michael's going to have to, like, basically catch him in the act. So Michael volunteers himself and Kit to be a part of the magic act. Now, this is how we find out that Kit's scanners were screwed with, because Kit's scanners can't pick up on how Templeton made himself appear in the trunk, couldn't figure out how the Table of Death works. However, this tiger keeps appearing on Kit's hood, keeps appearing in Kit. So it comes down to it. First of all, the tiger's name. Did you catch the tiger's name?
I didn't.
Simba. Thought that was interesting.
Oh,
the cat,
that is interesting.
The tiger's name was Simba. I thought that was really
strange. What about the other tiger, though? Simba 1 and Simba 2?
Simba and Kimba.
Really?
No, I just made that up.
Okay.
We find out, so when Browning is outed as, like, the mastermind behind this whole thing, he ends up kidnapping Devin. And when Michael realizes what's happened, Michael and Templeton's assistant go back to the magic show to try to find Devin, because essentially what happens is Ariel gives out the position. He gives out the address of where Templeton is about to murder Devin after a little bit of, like, you know,
the warehouse that Templeton keeps all his props in.
Exactly.
You know, so that he's just going to go there. Yeah. And off him in his own warehouse, which is fantastically stupid.
Right. My brain couldn't process that information. I apologize for wasting everyone's time. But I love this when Michael and his assistant are chased through the halls by the tiger. And then Kit synthesizes a male tiger, because this is the female tiger in heat. Kit synthesizes a male tiger to draw the female back out so that Michael and the assistant can escape. I loved it. It was great.
It was fantastic, but escape to where? Because now there's still a tiger loose in the building,
right,
who is, like, horny for Kit. Kit's like, I don't know what to do now. Kit's basically like, I don't know how to take care of this horny tiger.
Right.
What do I do?
This tiger's like,
and they leave.
Like, right.
Right, this tiger's, like, licking me, like, wants, like, rubbing itself all over me.
Yeah. Oh, it was.
Anyway, it was, yeah. But that scene where the tiger breaks through the door and Michael's fending it off with that chair.
Yes.
And you could completely tell there was no tiger there. He's just, like, overacting,
no,
fighting with his chair. Tiger, chair. Chair tiger. Get away, Kit, make horny sounds. That's Kit, exactly what it was going on.
Kit, make horny sounds.
Well, think about it. Kit, I have a horny tiger. I want you to attract it to you. Kit already hates dogs. Any animal that comes near, it tells him to piss off. But here he is getting a horny tiger to climb all over him.
Yes.
How demeaning for Kit. How much does Kit hate that?
Oh, my gosh. He's so embarrassed at this point. It's awful. It's absolutely awful. So they get Devin over to the warehouse, and they start to get him ready for one of Templeton's acts was, you know, chaining himself up, putting a wrap over his head, and throwing him into a tank of water, locking it, and then he has a certain amount of time to unlock himself and get out of the tank. But basically, they're going to just throw Devin in there and drown him to make it look like an accident. Or what? Maybe it wasn't even look like an accident. They're just going to drown him and go and get their money.
It's like, well, what's the point? A, you're giving yourself away where you're doing it. You're chaining them all up. You're doing all this stuff. Like, I didn't understand the end game. It was right. The dumbest shit.
There was no...
It was just like... As we kind of had this bizarre conversation about this, like, it was like a water fetish thing. They just wanted to watch him drown.
Right. Right. Well, and you said so, like, the climaxes of these episodes, like, really amount to nothing. And this was no exception because, you know, we get this, like, 30-second fight between Michael and Templeton. Michael right hooks Templeton, knocks him to the ground. They break the lock and they get Devin out. And there's just, like, there's no... you know, conclusion to this. We just never see Templeton again.
Right. And the thing is, like, Devin, what we even learn more about Devin, like, he was presumably going to his death, and he looked at the guy that betrayed him and said, it's easy to order an execution, but it's hard to watch one, isn't it? And then that's when they put the hood on and they threw him in. And those would have been Devin's last words. And he just did it. And then when they took him out of the tank, like RC3 and Michael were there, they got him out. All Devin said is, oh, they ruined my best suit, well, pretty much.
I mean, like, could there be like more of a badass way for Devin to go out by making that one quote? Because like we mentioned in the we were texting about this earlier, like Devin just did not seem fazed by the fact that he was just going to go out completely blindfolded and handcuffed in a tank of water. Like, he was just going to drown. He wasn't even struggling in the tank in any of the scenes we saw him. He was just floating there.
Right, right. Which makes me think he's already been there. Like, that wasn't new. That's why he wasn't scared. Like, it's already happened to him. He's got such a dark past and it doesn't matter. He's like, whatever. I've already done this. I don't care.
Like, what you just said, like, that last line he has when Michael pulls him out of the water and he just says, they ruined my best suit. And that's it. That's all he cares about. Like,
yeah, it was great. Fantastic. Oh my God. I want like some dark, like, memoir from the Miles, like, family, yes. You know, like a long lost relative after he's long dead, like, does this whole backstory and digs up all this information about who was Devin Miles back in the war, you know, and like this whole story about everything before the foundation. Oh, it'd be great. Because I imagine, much like Michael Knight, there is a point past which Devin has no history. Like, he just doesn't
exist.
That's
exactly right. And I want to feel like it was after, like, right around the POW, the prisoner of war camps, that the second time, like, that's when, like, Devin, whoever Devin was, ceased to exist in the prison camp. And that moving forward from that moment, like, nothing before that exists in his life.
Yeah, he's a different, like, there wasn't a Devin Miles. He was somebody else. And he did all this stuff and had to reinvent himself get away. And he became Devin Miles that we know of the foundation.
Why didn't anyone explore this as a spinoff series? That would have been more successful than any of the failed attempts at Knight Rider reboots.
Like a Devin Miles prequel. So we're all about it. We've talked about it so many times. We gush about this concept so much.
I mean, maybe you and I would have been the only ones to watch it, but still, it would have been great.
Oh, it's true. Oh, man, it would have been fun. Anyway.
So that's basically where we end the episode. We close out with Michael doing magic on stage, and, you know, everyone's all happy again, and no one, like, Devin's no worse for it, and that's it. Like, that's the end of the episode, and I mean,
I just want to point out again that, like, all this on stage stuff, Kit and Michael come and go on stage like nothing. Like, they drove up on stage to find stuff and then they left again. Like, there's some. I just thought it was really weird how easily it was to get Kit in and out of this building.
I mean, we could say at least they weren't in the lobby of the hotel like in that last episode where Kit just drives straight through it, obliterating the buffet table. But still,
right.
Like, where would they?
Well, yeah, totally.
Because, like, when Michael volunteers himself to be part of the act, he's like, all right, buddy, we're ready for you. And he just, like, drives on stage, like, within seconds. He's, like, just waiting behind the curtain.
That'd be great if you just left the engine running and everyone started getting lightheaded.
All right.
Kills the Tigers.
I got to preface this by saying that this was not a good episode by any stretch of the imagination. But everyone's saying that, like, you're going to all of our listeners and, like, people are like, just be ready for it. Just be ready. You're going to know when the decline of the show hits. OK, but I haven't seen it yet because these are not good. None of these have been good episodes in season 4. But son of a bitch, if these aren't just the most fun that I could be having watching a television show. Like, you know?
But, I mean, I guess compared to the first series, the first episode, the first season and several episodes, and if you just cut to right now,
yes,
these are terrible.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
If you're following along when this stuff's coming out, you're like, wow, these aren't good. The writing's lazy. The stories are stupid. They're running out of ideas.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? But coming at it from, you know, 30-year retrospect, these are brilliant. They're amazing.
Oh, they're absolutely phenomenal. I mean, I'm gonna give it a four star episode. Like, I'm gonna give it a turtleneck. It was just damn fun to watch. I had a blast with it.
I'll probably go with that too. It also felt like it was shot differently. It felt kind of handheld in some places.
Yeah.
It just felt different.
Yeah.
And Michael's jacket was so damn big.
It was the largest jacket I've ever seen.
I'm saying it again. Yeah.
Did you have a Schmankman this week?
So we didn't really talk about the comic relief this time around.
No, we didn't.
The woman, my Schmankman is her husband, who just seems like a dick.
Wait,
a real putz.
Was he was he her husband or was he a client?
I don't know. He said, "Wait here, listen to the radio. Don't kill the battery." Like, how long would it take for you to sit in your car to kill the battery listening to the radio?
Oh, my God. It would take
days?
Probably.
A week? I don't know.
Absolutely.
Anyway, so that guy, because he didn't make any sense, and we never see him again. He just tells her off, says, yeah, wait here, and then she falls in love with Kit.
Well, okay, so my Schmankman is the woman on that end
okay.
of it. because of the fact that, A, Kit's getting weird and freaky with her. Like, he's using, like, he's very risque with her in there, but she's completely falling for it,
mm-hmm,
very strangely, but sold it so convincingly. Like,
she asks him, what's your ideal woman? Because she thinks that the voice of Kit is coming from a real person just calling into the car. So she doesn't understand it. But Kit starts explaining that his ideal mate is, he starts explaining a car, but in kind of like really weirdly sexual technical details.
Yep.
Like talking about and a memory bank that I could interface with all day. You know, like,
yes.
Shit like that. Or like, damn, Kit is one horny little pile of bolts.
Wide tailpipe, large headlights, gas tank that you could fuck.
Day's gone. That's it.
Oh, God. Okay, Greg, do you want to hear what's coming up next week?
Oh, God, yes.
All right, tell me what you think this is going to be. I'm going to read you the title. Season 4, Episode 15, Redemption of a Champion.
Okay.
What do you think it's about?
I think it's about boxing.
You are absolutely right.
Really?
Yes.
Because of course it is.
It is. Okay. An investigation into the murder of a sports reporter leads Michael and Kit into the world of boxing, where they must apprehend a villainous promoter and persuade a former champ not to step back into the ring.
Great. Whatever.
Okay. Yeah. I wonder if it's Big Earl Dent.
Oh, yeah. Big Earl Dent. And, oh, my God. Yes.
Oh, I wish it was. I want it
Dent
to be,
Earl Dent.
I want it to be Dent Earl Dent. That was a nice reference. I appreciate that.
Anytime.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to get in touch with us, there are many ways to do that. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/JampaKlein, at Knight Rider Years on Instagram, at Knight Rider Pod on Twitter. You can visit our website, JampaKlein.com, to find all of the prior episodes of the Knight Rider Years if you want to listen to it on your browser. You can call the hotline at 207-835-1954 and leave us a message about anything. You can also leave us a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. Gregory, were you drinking seltzer?
Oh, my God. It was so good. I finished it.
Oh, good.
Man, it's delicious. I want more. This is my third one today. I'm a glutton.
I'm wicked jealous. I love San Pellegrino. Do you have any closing thoughts before we say goodnight, Greg?
Man, this can smells really good. No, I'm all set, David. How about you?
No, I got nothing else. So I guess... if all's set and ready to go, let's say goodnight. So, for the Knight Rider Years, I am your host, Horny Tiger in Heat.
And I am your other host, Kit's Miraculous New Tiger Skin Seat Covers.
Ooh. Have a fantastic week, everybody.
My senses detect a life form in distress at 3 o'clock. I'm not upset.
Your pulse rate is up, your blood pressure is high, and you're gripping the steering wheel with alarming pressure.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Podfix Network. Discover more audible gems like this at podfixnetwork.com. Make sure to catch up-to-the-minute network shenanigans by following at Podfix on Twitter, official_Podfix on Instagram, at Podfix Network on Facebook. And make sure to subscribe to Podfix Presents wherever you choose to find podcasts. The Podfix Network, artist owned and loved.